Okay, sorry about that. We'll start that again. I knew I was missing something, and it wasn't the morning run, but I'm glad you've got your sheets now. So as I said, we'll divide last week's stuff. At the moment, we're about to launch off from about 10 lines up from the bottom on Bet Amud Bet, on the second side of the first stuff. And last week, we began the Mishnah, and we essentially had two parts. The first was some thematic reflections on the premises of the Mishnah. Why are we even talking about when you mention the rain? What does it mean to call it Gevurot Keshamim? That these are the powers of rain. And we went through a universe of network of verses to try to establish why this vocabulary is being used, why we're saying this in prayer. We noted the second paragraph of the Shema is essentially the trigger for us mentioning rain during prayer. We say, La'avdo b'chol levavchem, b'chol nafshechem, you should serve God with all your heart, and then, v'natatim ta'arzchem, I'll give you rain. So, avodah shebalev, prayer, is where we should mention rain. And then we had the three keys that belong to God personally, and then we had the second part. That's about five lines down from the top of Bet Amud Bet. It's the first part, reflections on the Mishnah, broadly speaking, and then it gets to the text of the Mishnah itself, which had three views on when you mention Mashiach Aruch Menageshem. The first view was Rabbi Lezer on the first day of Sukkot. The second view, Rabbi Yeshua, was on the last day of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, which is the day that we do it. And the last view was Rabbi Yehuda, who says you say at Musaf on Shmini Atzeret, which is actually the view that we follow. So the Mishnah says, okay, we've got the thematics out of the way. Why is the vocabulary that's being used? Why are we mentioning this here? What is the very premise of this Masechta, which we said may be responding to Brachot, where we say, you say, Mashiach Aruch Meregeshem, we might be responding to Rosh Hashanah, that says we're judged for rain around Sukkot. And the Mishnah and the Gemara then turns to Rabbi Eliezer. Where does he get this view that you start on day one? And it said, okay, there's a couple of options. One, if he gets it from Nisuch HaMayim, which we'll spend a bit of attention on today. Anyone know what the source is for Nisuch HaMayim, that we do water libations? Where's there a pasuk that says we do water libations? Okay, excellent. So the answer is there isn't a pasuk that says we do water libations. We're going to have to do some exegetical gymnastics to arrive at that truth. But there isn't. There are discussion of libations, but it says Sheikhar LaHashem. What Sheikhar? Yeah, like alcoholic beverages. So there's alcoholic, which we see as wine libations, but where does water come from? So we'll get to that calculation today. But that's one possibility, the Nisuch HaMayim is where we learn from that you do it on the first day, or maybe it's because that's when you pick up Lulav, which then gets us down the track of, hold on a minute, let's just look at a brighter that discusses this openly. And that was that big light yellow portion on the middle of Bet Amud Bet, which is just citing another source text, saying there's a brighter that discusses all these views, and it actually added two more views. So we've got first days when you say Mashiach Aruch Meregeshem, the last days when you say Mashiach Aruch Meregeshem. One is Rabbi Eliezer, one is Rabbi Yeshua. And these names may sound, okay, forget about them, which we can do shortly. But for the sake of the coming daf, we're going to have to remember these names, because there's going to be a lot of trying to figure out who said what. Are there two Rabbi Yeshuas? Maybe one of them's the son of the other. Is there Rabbi Yehuda who's quite? So we're going to have to hold on to some of these names. Rabbi Eliezer says day one. Rabbi Yeshua says day eight. We had Rabbi Yehuda, who said that it's on day eight, but only at Musaf. And then we had two more views. We had Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, who says it's the second day. That's in green. And Rabbi Akiva said it's the sixth day. Now, we're on the dark yellow portion where it says, Shapir Ka'amale Rabbalaz at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet. And the Gemara is now reflecting on a portion of the Brayta that we cited, when Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Eliezer have a bit of back and forth, what we don't have in our Mishnah. Again, Rabbi Eliezer says we do it on day one of Sukkot. What was Rabbi Yeshua's complaint? Say, how can you say you do Mashiach Aruch on day one of Sukkot? What's the problem with that? It's going to rain on Sukkot. We don't want rain on Sukkot. And Rabbi Eliezer's response is, we noted it in the light yellow, he says, Af ani lo amarti l'shol. I'm not telling you to ask for rain, and the lahaskir, just to mention it. And you mentioned Tchiyat HaMetim every day, and guess when Tchiyat HaMetim is going to happen? Remember what we said? When's the revival of the dead going to happen?
Not today.
Oh, maybe today, but who's it up to? It's up to God. It's not up to us. So you want to mention it any day? Mention it any day. What difference is it going to make? That's his response. And the Gemara now says, Shapir ka'amalei Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yeshua. That was a pretty good point. So this is almost like a commentary, Lahavdil on a boxing match. Right? That was a pretty good hit, and Rabbi Yeshua didn't respond, where he said, you could mention Chit HaMetim any day, irrespective of the fact that it's not in your control, so you can mention rain any day. What difference does it make? What might Rabbi Yeshua respond to that?
Any day would be a good day for Chit HaMetim. Any day wouldn't be a good day for rain.
Excellent. Somebody who likes their family. So there you go. This is the response. It's Rabbi Yeshua. This is in the dark yellow. Shapir Kamla Rabbi Yeshua. The response of Rabbi Yeshua was good. Amalach Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua would respond. Bishlama Tchiyat HaMeitim Maske Dekula Yamas Manehu. It would make sense to mention Tchiyat HaMeitim any day, because any day would be good for Tchiyat HaMeitim. Dekula Yamas Manehu. Ela Geshamim, but rain, Kol Ema Da'achins Manehu. Whenever it rains, it's good for it. We're about to find out in a moment. Raining any time is not always convenient. And of course, they're talking agriculturally. Rain in the middle of the summer, presumably, might not be good for the crops. It's going to over-soak them. It's going to stop their development. It's not helpful. Vatnan, but again, he doesn't say look out the window at agricultural facts to determine that. He says that we've got a Mishnah that says, Yatsa Nisan v'yardu gushamim simen klala haim. If Nisan has passed, if Pesach is over and it starts raining, that is a curse. We don't want rain then. That's when the crops need to breathe free in the clear air and the bright sun. But how do we know it's bad? Shnei emar halok tzuchitim hayom. And it quotes the Pasuk now from the book of Samuel, from Shmuel, when Shmuel's about to hand over the reins to the king of Israel. Who's the first king? Saul HaMelech is about to take over. Shmuel, is he happy about this turn of events, this rise of monarchic politics? No, Shmuel is very unhappy about this. He's the reigning prophet, judge, and the people turn to him and say, we want a king like all the other nations. And he turns around and says, well, what's wrong with me? And what's wrong with my sons? And they say, well, you're fine, but you're getting older. Your sons, however, I'm sorry to tell you this, my friend, they're deeply corrupt. And they said, what? And then they get in trouble. And then he gives them essentially the first version of the opposite of the Magna Carta. Magna Carta is all the limits on the king. And Shmuel gives the people all the powers of the king, almost to intimidate them from saying, you want a king? Well, he's going to take all your children. Your sons are going to go to war. Your daughters are going to serve the kingdom. He's going to take taxes. And at that point, the people don't even say, okay, forget it. Say, all right, we're in. We want a king. We need power. So in the speech that he gives at the end, as they're about to transition into this new political build-up, he says, Halok sirchitim hayom, and in the rest of the Pasuk, he says, Ekra Lashem. Sure, today is, that you can actually see this in the Torah, or it's the bottom left, a small box. He says, today's going to be harvest day, and guess what? I'm going to call for rain, and it's going to curse you. But we say rain is a blessing, so it's after Nisan. This is when the king was anointed, so there we know that there's a curse. If it rains after Nisan. So that's Rabbi Shua's response. Any day is a good day for Tchit HaMeitim, so you can mention any day. Not any day for rain is a good day. So if I were the Gemara and I had endless space, I would say, oh, Shapir Ka'am Rabbi Shua L'Rabbi Lezer. That's a good response. What's Rabbi Lezer's response? And obviously the Gemara can't entertain every back and forth. But presumably what we see again at the crux of this debate is, when I pray, am I actually influencing providence or not? And that's the basic debate here. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, if you mention it, you might make it happen. And any day is a good day for Tchiyat HaMeitim, but not any day is good for rain. And Rabbi Elazar is still with the premise, what we say does not compel providence. So you can say it in as much as you like till you're blue in the face. You're not going to make something happen unless God wants it to happen. So you can mention Tchiyat HaMeitim any day, and you can mention rain any day, because God's going to bring it when he wants to bring it, irrespective of your prayer. But the Gemara leaves that as a full stop. We turn to the blue part now. And now we're going to do the rest of the daf, and we'll manage it in half an hour, not a problem. And we're going to essentially split this again into two parts. And the first part is reflections on the Braita that we cited. So again, we had four views in the Braita, two of which were mentioned in the Mishnah, and two more. So the Braita is now going to figure out, where does Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera get his view that you mentioned it on the second day? Because the first day we understood, maybe that's from Lulav, maybe that which the Braita says, because he says, when you pick up the lulav, you say, Mashiv Radageshem. If it's the last day, where do you get it from on the last day? That's when you put down the lulav. So now I understand, what happens uniquely on the second day of Sukkot? Other than everybody's exhausted and the rabbi doesn't give a drasha. What happens uniquely on the second day of Sukkot? Yeah, not much. So the Gemara is now wondering, where did Rabbi Yehuda Batera get the idea that you start saying Mashiv HaRuach on the second day of Sukkot? The only thing we can think of is maybe, well, nothing else is happening, so maybe it's something to give meaning to the day. But now we're going to have to underline, maybe there is something that happens on the second day of Sukkot. And the view of Rabbi Akiva that you say it on the sixth day of Sukkot. What's special about the sixth day of Sukkot? Well, Erev Yom Tov is going to be Hoshana Rabbah. Unclear how many Minhagim and Hoshana Rabbah were around at the time, but it seems to be an important day. But actually, Hoshana Rabbah is what? Which day? The seventh day. Shmini Atzeret is the eighth day. So the seventh day would be Hoshana Rabbah. Sixth day, again, nothing. So where's Rabbi Akiva getting his view from? So we're going to begin this by saying, where do Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera and people get their views that the second day or the sixth day are important? And that's when you begin Mashiv HaRoneg Yeshem. Then after we've analyzed their views, we're going to turn to some broader reflections on providence again. Because if we're being asked now, and we don't follow the view of Rabbi Eliezer so far that our prayers don't compel providence. We follow the view that when we pray, we compel providence, and we ought to look around the world and recognize the import of rain. And it seems that precipitation is a unique barometer of providence, and rain is our way of accessing God. But really, I think I mentioned maybe it was a couple years ago in one share about a book by A.J. Goldberg, I think A.J. Goldstein, called Thanks a Thousand. Those of you who've got coffee in front of you, or tea, or a plate, or a bagel, his whole book, a thick book, is basically a reflection on a cup of coffee. Where he says, you wake up in the morning, you hold your cup of coffee, and often we just down the coffee and move on. But if you take a moment to think about all the toil and the effort that it took for this to be in your hand, you could spend all day, you could write a book about it, which is what he then went on to do. Which is, and he wrote about the paper mills, and those who cut down the trees to make the cup. He wrote about the plastic factories that make the holder or the lid for the cup. He then went to the bean fields. And you could reflect for hours on all that it took for this to be in your hand. And it awakens you to a sense of gratitude. So really, if we're grateful for rain, and that's a barometer of our success, what else should we be grateful for? In the background, what brings rain? How does rain get to me? I'm talking meteorologically. How does the rain get here? What can there... Clouds. So maybe we should mention clouds. And what brings the clouds here as opposed to somewhere else?
Wind.
So maybe I should mention wind. In fact, we do mention wind, Mashiv HaRuach. So do we have to mention wind? So we're now going to talk about that. What else arrives every single morning that we often, well, actually, now that I'm going to the early minyan, we do notice, but usually we don't notice. Dew, or dew, as you may call it. So maybe we should mention dew. Why don't we mention dew? In fact, some do have a minhag to mention dew all year. What do they say? Morid Hatal. Anybody here say Morid Hatal? A couple of people.
We
say V'tein Tal Umata when we ask for these things. So now, dew, clouds, rain, wind. Maybe we should be conscious of all these things. And why aren't we? So that's going to be the second half of this stuff. So let us begin. The bottom six lines up. Yehuda ben Batera. So the Gemara is now saying, okay, you introduce this brighter with a single purpose. And this is, again, evidence of the stream of consciousness flow. This brighter was introduced for one purpose, to prove how does Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah know that you say it on the first day, which we answered in the first line of the brighter, because he learns it from Lulav. Okay, wonderful, we've answered the question, but now the Gemara says, since you mentioned the whole brighter, where on earth do these views come from that you do it on the second or sixth day? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera Omer B'sheni B'chag Humazkir. He says you start saying Mashiv HaRuach on the second day. My Talmud Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera, what is his reason? Where does this come from? D'tanya, another brighter, which we should now know, even one daf in, is dangerous. You mention a brighter, we're now going to start wondering where other things in that brighter come from, and we may get carried away. Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera, Omer, Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera says, Noma B'sheni, it says concerning the second day of Sukkot, and this is going to be found in the Laning for Sukkot, where we describe the Korbanot for each day. On the second day, it says, V'niskehem. And their libations. Okay. V'nema b'shishi, on the sixth day, it says, unsacheha. For those who lay on sukkahs, this can often be a little tricky and trip you up, because it says, unsacheha v'niska v'niskehem, and you've got to pay attention. I mean, I guess you should always pay attention when you're laying, but you've got to pay attention to those small differences. On shishi, it says, unsacheha. V'nema b'shvi'i, and on the seventh day, it says, k'mishpatam, according to their laws. And now what the Gemara is going to suggest is, in each instance, the Torah could have been less expressive. It could have been minimalist and said, V'niska. Just say, and its libation. Why does that say, and its libations? or according to its laws. It's according to the law. And actually, that means on a combination of these three words is mem, yud, mem. There is an extra mem, an extra yud, and an extra mem. So let's trace that out. The first word, v'niske hem, you don't need that final mem. It just says v'niska, unsacheha. That final mem is spare. On shishi, says unsacheha. You could miss that yud, and it would just say v'niska. So we've got a spare yud. And on shvi, it says k'mishpatam, their laws. It could miss that final mem. We've got an extra mem, yud mem, harikan mayim. That spells out water. And if this sounds like a gematria that you'd have in kind of a Purim Torah, the Gemara is very aware, and the halachists are very aware, that this doesn't sound that compelling, which is why it will say, harikan mayim, mikan remez l'nisuch hamayim min haTorah. This is a hint. And many of the commentators suggest that this isn't the real, what we call exegetical foundation. This isn't the limud for this practice. Meaning, on the basis of these spare letters, you institute a korban in the Bet Mikdash. What if you do something in the Bet Mikdash you're not meant to do? What happens to you? Let's say, what happened to Nadav and Avihu when they did something they weren't meant to do? Yeah, it doesn't work out well. So you can't just randomly do things in the temple. So the fact that we're saying it says mem yud mem, also we should have water libations, is an astonishing limud. On one level, you can also suggest that what we're actually exhibiting here is the exegetical sensitivity we're suggesting one has to our experience. You pay attention to what's extra in the world that we really need but don't notice. And that's, to some degree, why this limud is functioning here. Say, look at what's spare in these letters, and that should make us pay attention to the water around us and teach us to do water libations. Now, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah says, it's mem yud mem, that's why we do water libation. So again, the Gemara is now saying, okay, very nice, but how do I know you stay on second day? Mishnah b'sheni denakat. Okay, so why do you mention on the second day, Mashiach v'ruach d'ageshem, just because now you know about water libations? The chiramize lehu bikra, because when the Torah first starts hinting about water libations, that first mem was on which day? Second day. So b'sheni hu d'remize, hilkach b'sheni madkarina. So according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah, water libations, nisuch hamayim, does not start on day one. So now if I were to ask again the question at the start, what is special about day two of Sukkot? And our answer was, nothing. For Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah, there is something deeply significant and new about the second day, which is that's when nisuch hamayim begins. There was no nisuch hamayim on day one. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, omer b'shushi b'chak b'maski. Rabbi Akiva says, you start saying Mashiach v'ruach on the sixth day. And now we can begin to expect that he's now going to say water libations begin on the sixth day. And again, these are debates about temple practice. This is not small, low-stakes debates that they're staging. Rabbi Akiva says on the sixth day, Shne'emar, because b'shishi unsacheha, on the sixth day it said, and its libations in the plural. And since it says that on the sixth day in plural, B'shnei nisuchin akadim medaber, it's talking about two libations. Echad nisuch hamayim ve'esed nisuch hayayin. One is water and one is wine. Okay, so what's his central argument? That it's only on the sixth day that we have a plural referring to libations. Is that true? That of the three quotes, only one of them is talking in plural about libations? Mishpatam is talking about its laws, so that's plural laws. What about plural libations? The v'niskehem. So Rashi actually notes that v'niskehem means its libations, referring to all the korbanot. Unsacheha says its libations, referring to a single korban, indicating there's more than one libation happening at the same time. So that's how we must know one is a water libation and one is the wine libation, which is described explicitly wine, but we get water on the sixth day. And he said, well, hold on a minute. How do you know? Maybe it says its libations in the plural, and you have two libations of what? Of wine. Where are you getting water from, Rabbi Akiva? If it just says plural, so maybe you have to get two bottles of wine and pour them out. So how do you know it's water? Savlak Rabbi Ben Beteri says, no, he follows Rabbi Ben Beteri, Dhamma Rizei Maya, that we just said has the mem yud mem. Now the Gemara is going to push back and say, if you follow Rabbi Ben Beteri, that this is mem yud mem, so then, over the leaf on Gimel Amad Aleph, Esav Lach Rabbi Ben Beterah, Neimah Kvatei. So follow him. If you follow him, follow him. If you're saying that Mem Yud Mem is the clue that there's water libation, so begin on the second day when it starts hinting Mem Yud Mem. So his response is, Kasav Rabbi Kiva, Ki Ketiv Nisuch Yetera B'Shishi Hu Dechtev. He says, you're right, the hint begins on the second day, but our awareness that you have to do water only starts on the sixth day, and you've got to get all the letters out, and if you were to start on Shishi, you wouldn't have enough room to get up to Mayim. So the hint begins on the second day, but the crux is on the sixth day. Full stop. Now we know Rabbi Akiva gets his view. He gets from Nusach HaMaim, which begins on the sixth day. We know Rabbi Bateira gets his view. It comes from Nusach HaMaim, which begins on the second day. Now, in passing, the Gemara notes, Tanya, we have a brighter on this subject where we may learn Nusach HaMaim from otherwise. So far, again, what is the foundational understanding for how we get to water libations? How do I know there's Nusach HaMaim? What's the evidence? Again, if we're talking about justified law, how do we connect this to the Tanakh? Mayim, Mem Yud Mem. So far, that kind of exegetical redundancy is the only proof we have for there being a practice in the temple of Mayim, Nisuch HaMayim. So it notes, Tanya, there's a brighter that you should be aware of, that there's another way to see the Rabbi Natan Omer. Rabbi Natan said, "Bekodesh Hasech Nechsech Shecha LaHashem." The pasuk earlier in Kaf Hei in Bamidbar that describes libation says, in the sanctuary, Bekodesh Hasech Nechsech, surely you shall pour Shecha LaHashem, alcoholic libations to God. B'shnei nisuchin akadum medabes. Clearly, he says, it's talking about two kinds of libations. How is that clear? Echad nisuch hamayim v'esin nisuch hayayim. One is water and one is wine. How do I know it's two? Because hasech nesech. It says, you shall surely pour. And this is actually quite frequent in exegetical practice. When it's repeated, shamar tishamer, aser ta'aser. Actually, we'll come to that later in Tanit. You shall surely do something isn't just emphatic, which some of the medieval commentators presume it is, but it has a double meaning. There's a repetition for a purpose. So he says it's repeated. There's two, clearly. And the Gemara says, first word on the line is hayayin, and it says, eima tarvayu lechamra. Okay, so it says hasech nesech, there are two. So why are you going beyond where the verse leads you? It says, Shecha LaHashem. Maybe there should be two wine libations to God. How do I know one is water? Maybe they're both wine. In Cain, if it were both wine, Lichtov cry, the verse would have said, Hasech Hasech or Nasech Nasech. My Hasech Nasech, there's a shift in the expression, Shma Minach Adamayachat Chamra, full stop, end of section. So now there is an alternative view. So someone says, how do you know there are water libations in Jewish practice? Two possible views. One is Mem Yud Mem, which is Rabbi Mateira and Rabbi Akiva. The alternative is Rabbi Natan, it says actually it's earlier from Kaf Hei and Bamidbar when it says Hasech Nesech, which indicates there are two kinds of libations. Now we know where water libations come from. Which day does it start?
The second.
According to Rabbi Mateira, or? Sixth, according to Rabbi Akiva. And we're about to find out. Well, hold on a minute. What about the views that say you start saying Mashiach Baruch Midageshem on day one? What about the view that says you say Mashiach Baruch again on day eight? If we're trying to connect this to water libations, and we're trying to follow this to the end of the channel, maybe we need to figure out there's a view that it starts on day one or on day eight. So, Elahadit Nan. The Gemara now responds, says, hold on a minute. We've got another Mishnah. And again, you can imagine kind of the Bet Midrash sort of people saying, hold on, I heard this, I heard this. Where does this come from? Whose view is that? You said Rabbi Yeshua, which Rabbi Yeshua are you talking about? I heard Rabbi Yehuda saying it in the name of Rabbi Lezer. And you can imagine this being a vivid discussion that's now trying to be sorted out on paper. So, Elahadit Nan, we learned a Mishnah. This is in Sukkot, in Masechet Sukkah. Nisuch HaMayim Kol Zayin. That there is water libations all 7 days. And if it's all 7 days, when does it start?
Day one.
So now, who says it starts on day one? We've got Rabbi Yudim Mateir on day two, we've got Rabbi Akiva on day six, and there's another Mishnah that says you do it for 7 days. And if you're doing it for 7 days, you've got to start on day one. So who is that? Money, who is it? End of that line. Rabbi Yeshua, if it's Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua is the figure who says you start Mashiach Baruch Midageshem on day eight. So if it's him, you only do Nisuch HaMayim for 1 day. It should say Ne'emachad Yoma. Rabbi Akiva, if it's Rabbi Akiva, Trei Yoma. Rabbi Akiva says you start on day six, so it should only be 2 days. So we'll get our arithmetic hat on as well. Yehuda Mateira, if it's Yehuda Ben Mateira who says you start on day two, Shita Yoma, it's 6 days. So who on earth is it who says you do water libations all 7 days? Bottom line is, it's all of us. That's the bottom line view that the halacha follows. So you do it all 7 days, which is not Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira or Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Shua. So who is it? La'olam Yehuda ben Teira. Oh no, really, it is Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira who said, when do you start on day two? How do you get to seven if you start on day two? So you go into the eighth, which is Shmini Atzeret. Okay, so now they're going to say, it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah of Asfaralek, Rabbi Yehuda de Matnitin, and he holds like the view of Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, and when it says of our Mishnah, it doesn't mean the Mishnah we did, but of another Mishnah that we're in possession of. Did none, and that Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, belug, with a lug of water, hayimanasa kol shmona, you do it all 7 days. Hold on a minute, eight. If you do it all 8 days, then how is he going to do it all 7 days? So now we've got to say, well, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah says, you don't start on day one. He says you start on day two. So if you start on day two and you go till day eight, any accountants in here? Seven. That's where we end up. Umapik Rishon Umayel Shemine. So he negates the first day and he adds the eighth day, so you end up with seven. Umayshna Rishon Dolo. Why does he disagree with the first day? Rudime Matera says you start on day two. We already established why, because of Mayim. But if he follows Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah, your remez from the Psukim is very nice, but why don't you follow your authority if you're following tradition? And his response is, Dechiramize Mayim Besheni Udramize. I already told you my remez. Says, okay, either you're attached to tradition or you're attached to your remez. If you're following Rabbi Yehuda, do it all 8 days. If you're following your remez, you begin on the second, and when do you end? The remez says, Kamishbatam, on day seven. That's the last reference, Mem Yud Mem. Mem begins on two, you've got the Yud on six, and you've got the Mishbatam on seven. So if you're following your remez, where should the range end?
Seven.
So you can't come along and say, I follow Rabbi Yehuda, that he goes all eight, so I'm going to do the eight. But I don't start the same time as him. I start where my remez starts on day two. Either you've got to follow your exegetical route or you've got to follow tradition. So that's how it's going to unfold. Maishna Rishon Dolo, why don't you do it on the first day? Because the day of the reference is the second day. Shmine Nami, then on the eighth day too, you should follow your hint. Ki remize mine, b'shviyud remize. The hint ends on day seven. So you're mixing and matching your review, and the Gemara uses that as a way to say, okay, it's not Rabbi Matera. It can't be him that follows the Mishnah that we do it all 7 days. So, but we're back to square one. Who is it? Ela Rabbi Yeshua he. It's Rabbi Yeshua. Now, anyone remember when Rabbi Yeshua says, you start Mashiva Ruch Menageshem? Rabbi Yeshua was the view that said Mashiva Ruch Menageshem begins. He was in the Mishnah. The second view we had in the Mishnah. On the Achron de Chag, on the last day of Chag. So really, presumably, he thinks that Nisuch HaMayim begins on the last day. But anyone remember what in the Mishnah he said is the reason why it's on the last day? Mishat Hanchato. He says, oh, it's because when you put the lulav down, he never mentions water libations. So this is when the Gemara is going to say, yeah, he's not that interested in water libations. The reason you say Mashav Renageshem is because you put the lulav down. Nisuch HaMayim is a different question for him. And for him, Nisuch HaMayim, this is the first word on the line, is Yehoshua. 4 lines up in the light yellow. Nisuch HaMayim Kol Shiva Hilchata Gemirele. He says, yes, you do Nisuch HaMayim all 7 days for one very straightforward reason. Because I don't learn it from Mem Yud Mem. I don't learn it from Sukkim. I learn it straightforwardly from tradition and the best tradition there is, which is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. These are one of the things that Moshe was told at Har Sinai that is never put down in text. It's never been debated. It's just a fact of halachic life that was revealed at Sinai. Any other things anyone aware of Halacha L'Moshe Misinai that we say is just a law from God at Sinai that does not need a pasuk, can't have a pasuk, you can't debate it? Excellent. And that's also the first example I come to. Tefillin have to be black. Do you say anywhere in the Torah tefillin have to be black? No. Is it a matter of debate? I mean, I have seen some people like orange tefillin, like Gush Katif, some people have. But I mean, that was not people who were traditionally observant. Although observant enough to have tefillin. But no, they have to be black, or it's not kosher. In fact, I've got some ink in my little shtender in the main shul. People have got these black pens to fill it in, because it's got to be black. There's no hint in the pasuk, and there's no hint in the rabbinic corpus that we're looking for a pasuk. It's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, and for Rabbi Yeshua, that's also where Nisuch HaMayim come from, irrespective of Mashiv Renegeshem. Okay. And the Gemara now says, well, since you're mentioning to now that you mention it, Reb Ami said in the name of Reb Yochanan, in the name of Nechunya, in the name of a man from Ish, from Beit Chortan, there are 3 Halacha L'Moshe Misinais. And one of them is going to be Nisuch HaMayim, which is why it's mentioning here. Eser Nitiot, 10 plantings. Each of these we could spend time unfolding. I'll say briefly what Rashi says here, which is on Erev Shvi'it, on the year before Shemitah year, we're in Shemitah year now, so we're talking about before Tishrei, for 30 days, there is an additional prohibition to work the land for 30 days in front. In the same way that there's a prohibition for a few minutes before Shabbat. There's something called Tosefet Shabbat. You have to have extra time before Shabbat observing Shabbat. So you've got an extra time before Shemitah observing Shemitah. There is an exception based on Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. If you've got 10 trees planted in a particular small plot of land, if you don't work them, they'll die. And so on Erev Shvi'it, you can still work them. There's no pasuk for that. That's halacha l'mishmi Sinai. Arava is the next halacha l'mishmi Sinai, which is walking around the mizbeach, according to Tosfot here, with your aravot. What we do with our aravot, that whole practice, halacha l'mishmi Sinai. And then finally, nisuch hamayim halacha l'mishmi Sinai, water libations, halacha l'mishmi Sinai. End of discussion, full stop, take a breath. Okay, now we've got 3/4 of the daf left in 10 minutes. Anyone want to wage any bets if we can do it? Yeah, let's see. Okay, so we're still in that first portion of the daf where we're reflecting on the brighter. So far, all we've done, and I don't mean that to degrade what we've done, but just to condense what we've done, all we've done so far is, in that brighter, we had views of Mashivaruch starts on second day and views of the on the sixth day. Where on earth does that come from? Nothing significant happens on those days. So what we've suggested, actually, there is. Kundra bin Batera and Rabbi Akiva, that's where Nisuch HaMayim begins. Then we entered a discussion about, well, some say it happens all 7 days. Who is that? Where does this come from? And the view that Salach HaMimish Sinai. Now, there is nafgamines, depending on whether you learn this from a pasuk, you learn this from tradition, to do with whether you get malchus if you do Nisuch HaMayim in your backyard instead of in the Bet Mikdash. Either way, I'd recommend not doing Nisuch HaMayim in the backyard. You're welcome to water your plants, but don't say this is, the, you know, I have in mind, I'm doing water libations. We're not going to whip you either way. But that's the basic bottom line nafgamin about whether it's from Sukkim or not. Now, it carries on with the brighter, because the brighter actually does something the Mishnah didn't do. Because it quotes Rabbi Yehuda at the end. And Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah right at the beginning said, oh, on the last day of Chag, the first person doesn't say Mashiv HaRoch, but the second person does. What's different about the brighter is Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing, but he says it in the name of Rabbi Yeshua. So this is somewhere in the brighter, in the light yellow section, 4 lines up on Bet Amud Bet, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mishum Rabbi Yeshua. Who's Rabbi Yeshua? Does Rabbi Yeshua appear in the Mishnah already? Yeah, Rabbi Yeshua is the second name. So he's saying it in the name of the person in the Mishnah who disagrees with him. So now it's going to go back and forth. Which Rabbi Yeshua? Hi, Rabbi Yeshua. This is in the light green. Which Rabbi Yeshua is he talking about in the name of Imala Rabbi Yeshua Dematnitin? If you say it's Rabbi Yeshua of the Mishnah whose views already expressed, Ha Amar Bayom Devar Achron Shalchagu Maskir. He says you mention it on the last day of Chag. And he doesn't say a difference between Shachar and Musaf, so it's not the same view. El Rabbi Yeshua de Brighter. Maybe it's Rabbi Yeshua of the brighter, rather than our Mishnah, who says Mishad Hanchato when you put down the lulav. That can't be either, because he doesn't make a distinction between Shachris and Musaf. There's no difference between Shachris and Musaf when it comes to picking up the lulav, putting it down. V'tuha Tanya, and also we've got a brighter elsewhere. Rabbi Yehuda makes his point not in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, but in the name of Ben Batera, another person. However, lifnei yom achron shel chag ha'achron mazkir, that the Musaf is when you change it. So at one point we've got Rabbi Yehuda quoting Rabbi Yeshua. One point we've got him quoting Ben Batera, and the Rabbi Yeshua that he's quoting doesn't match up with the Rabbi Yeshua of our Mishnah or the Rabbi Yeshua of the brighter that we quoted. So who is this mysterious source? Is it Ben Batera? Is it Rabbi Yeshua? And Rabbi Yeshua, is it? Hi, Ben Batera. Which Ben Batera is it? Ilema, we have to say Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera. It is Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera, a figure we have not come across yet. And sometimes Rabbi Yehuda... Ilema Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera. If we say it's Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera, Hama B'Shem B'Chag U'Maske, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera in our Braita says it's on the second day, not on the last day. So Amr Ibn Nachman Yitzchak, Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak says, Tana B'Rabbi Yeshua Ben Batera. It is an unknown figure so far. We've heard Rabbi Yehuda, we've had Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera, but we have not had Rabbi Yeshua Ben Batera. This cousin, I guess, or brother of Yehuda ben Batera, Zimnim Nikrele Bishmei, sometimes he's referred to as Rabbi Yeshua, Zimnim Nikrele Bishmei Da'aba, and sometimes he's referred to by his father's name as Ben Batera. One is before he had smicha, they used to call him, hey, Ben Batera, and then after he got smicha, they said, all right, let's call him Yeshua and have a little bit of respect for him. So either way, that again was just, who is being quoted? In this Mishnah, let's trace this to the source in the brighter. Now, full stop, that's end of the first section. The whole rest of the daf is reflections on clouds and dew and wind, as we noted. So let's breeze through. Tana, it was taught in a brighter, Batal Barucha lo chai v'acham lahaskevim balahaskim maskev. The sages said, when it concerns dew and wind, you don't have to mention anything. Only rain, mashiv arucha morid ha-geshem, is the key. My Tama, what's the reason that we don't have to mention, if we've said you have to be aware of providence, if we are following Rabbi Yeshua, that we believe our prayers can impact our daily lives and the meteorological conditions of our lives, why shouldn't I mention dew? Why shouldn't I mention clouds? Without those, we couldn't sustain our crops either. My Tama, first words on the line, and this is key, because dew and wind are never ne'etzarin, never withheld. Another translation is they never stop. And this is, again, it sounds like a technical point, but a fundamental point of providence, that there are things in life that we can take for granted, have nothing to do with providence in the sense that it ties into our lives, that it doesn't reflect on who we are or what we do, that there are things in our meteorological condition, the fact that there are clouds, the fact that dew falls, the fact that the wind blows, we cannot tie to our behavior. That's what's being established. Not that it's never windy. There are days without wind. There is time when wind stops, but never ne'etzarin. It's never held back. God never uses that. If we were thinking about as parents, are there any disciplinary measures that are kind of beyond the pale? Growing up, being hit was not beyond the pale. Now, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure people can report you if you hit your children. Is that right? Because I'll stop it if that's true. I'm kidding. But I mean, at least in England, I'm pretty sure you can report parents to the authorities if you see them hitting their children. There are disciplinary measures that are considered to be too far. And Chazal is saying, God will never stop dew. God will never stop the wind. Rain, he'll stop. That'll get your attention. But there are some things he'll never stop. And how do I know? And that's key, because when it says, how do I know dew never stops? The straightforward answer to that would be what? How do I know it never stops? Outside. Go outside every day. And that, again, is not the direction Chazal are going to go, because they're saying, I'm not talking technically about whether it stops or not. Some days there may be no dew. But if there is no dew, what do I know is not causing that? It's not God. It is not God being angry. Sometimes nature does what nature does. Maybe we've ruined the cosmos. Who knows? Maybe we've messed up the atmosphere. But if dew stops, that's not from God. That's the suggestion the Chazal are making. How do I know? And it's going to go back and forth from a case in the Navi again. How do I know that dew never stops? Because it says, this is when Eliyahu goes against Ahav, a wicked king, and he says to Ahav, listen, mate, you better pay attention, because now God's put me in charge of the rain and God's put me in charge of the dew. I'm going to stop it all and you're going to regret being so wicked. So remember, he says, I'm stopping rain and I'm stopping dew. He says, V'yomeleo atishbi metoshvei geled el achav, chai Hashem, by God's name, Elokei Yisrael, Hashem, mandi lefanavim yehashanim e'ela, talam atakim lefi devari, I'm controlling dew and rain. Uktiv. And then at the end of that embargo, when Eliyahu comes back and says, I'm going to reinstate it all, he says, God says, go and tell him the rain's going to come back. What doesn't he tell him is going to come back? Do. He said, I'm not going to do dew or rain. And then at the end he says, okay, rain's coming back. So that's a signal. And he doesn't mention tal here. My tama why mishum delo miatre, because it never gets withheld. So even though Eliyahu says I'm not going to let the dew came, it comes. It's none to do with it. Ukima achad lo miatse Eliyahu tashavi lamele. Hold on a minute. If he can't control dew, what question might you have? Why did he start by saying I'm going to stop the dew and the rain? What was the point of saying that? Hachi kamale afilu tal de bracha namlo ati. He was saying even the tal of bracha. You're not going to get. Meaning tal can't stop. But of course, it can be more dew. And that's a blessing. He's saying, I'm going to stop that extra blessing. So if you're going to stop that extra blessing, maybe at the end you should say, I'm going to bring it back. So at the end, he should say, I'm going to bring back matar and tal of bracha. He doesn't mention it because he can't notice it. Dew is dew. And if it falls, it falls. You're not going to notice if there's extra. How do I know that the wind is never withheld? Amr Meshu ben Levi, as we'll see here, and I'll stop in a couple of minutes, even if we only get down a few more lines, because the next part will go very quickly next week. What we'll see again, this is a reflection on how do I know that God never stops the wind, and what we're about to get is a theological nugget about how to survive in the diaspora, how to view our exile, how to tolerate persecution. Rav Shu ben Levi says, Dhammakrat says in the verse, Ki ka'ar baruchot ha-shamayim perashti etchem no mashem. God says, I will scatter you, ka'ar baruchot, like the four winds of the heavens. Ilema Micah Amalahu. What is God saying? This is from a prophecy from Zechariah, if I'm not mistaken, which I could spend a second looking down to the Torah, or someone can correct me if I'm wrong. From Zechariah, where God says, I will scatter you like the four winds of the heavens, says God. So the sages now say, Micah Amalahu, what was God saying to the people? Ilema, if he was saying, Hachi Kamalahu, God was saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, I will scatter you to the four corners of the world. He wouldn't have said ka arba, ba arba mibaile. He would have said in the four winds of the world will I scatter you. Elahaki kaman, this is what God was saying. And this is This is recurrent in Chazal. In an age of diaspora and exile and persecution, they take what looks on its face to be divine displeasure and find a way to console the Jewish public. What is God saying? I will scatter you like the four winds. It sounds like I'm going to throw you out into the world and you're going to end up wherever you end up, and that's your problem. But what he's actually saying, according to Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Kashem she'i efshar le'olam b'luruchot, I will throw you out ka'arba ruchot, like the four winds. And just as the four winds are necessary for the world to work, without wind, nothing would happen. I know it can be irritating to have wind, but without it, clouds wouldn't move. Nothing would happen. Kashem she'i efshar b'luruchot, kai efshar le'olam b'Yisrael, so too the world cannot survive without Israel, without Jews. So what Chazal are doing in this moment is saying, if you think you're scattered out there and God doesn't care about you, actually God is scattering you in the world because the world can't survive without Jews. And suddenly we now got a theology of diaspora that suggests that actually if we're scattered, there's a purpose here. God puts us around the world so that we can influence the world around us, so we can shine a light and bring truth and disseminate our moral code. Just like the wind keeps the world moving, Jewish culture, Jewish spirit keeps the world turning. So we've got, suddenly we're caught with this reflection, then we have to remind ourselves, oh yes, we're just trying to establish that the wind doesn't need to be mentioned in tefillah because God can never withhold it because it's so key. And again, this is part God. Stopping wind and stopping dew is out of God's toolbox when it comes to discipline. He says, that's foundational, I cannot touch that, and I will not touch that. And I assure that to you in Psukim. That's why we don't have to mention it. It's like if I go on my daughter and say, Daddy, please don't hit me. So, I never hit you. Why are you saying that? It's offensive that you think I might. So us turning to God and saying, please, God, don't stop the dew, you say, I would never stop the dew. Who do you think I am? But rain... So if they come home and say, Daddy, please let me watch TV all day, no. I may stop you from doing that because that gets your attention. So we'll do one more. We'll do the gray, and the next time we'll blast forward. So Amram Chanina, this is bottom line halacha, which will obviously not be bottom line because we'll have a lot more medieval and then pre-modern commentaries on it, but this is the Gemara's bottom line. Amram Chanina, Hilkach, therefore, based on everything we've said so far, b'yemot ha'chamar, in the summer, Amram Hashiv HaRuach, if in the summer you say, and then you say, I shouldn't, so carry on. It's not a big deal to mention the wind, because you don't have to mention the wind, you don't have to not mention the wind, it's not a big deal. But if you say Morid Hageshem in the summer, that can be a curse we've established. After Nisan, it is a curse. So you don't want to mention rain, because you might unleash providence. You might, God said, my children said to me, please bring rain. It's not a good idea. So you have to go back. If in the rainy season, you didn't say blow the wind, it doesn't matter, God's going to blow the wind either way. It's not a factor of providence. If you don't say bring the rain, you should bring the rain because you need it and you can influence providence. And not only that, if in the middle of winter or in the summer, whenever you say blow the wind, bring the dew, you don't have to go back. Even though you've got a little carried away, because at the end of the day, God doesn't influence providence that way. Should we do the blue very quickly? Anyone need to run? We can blast through it in about 20 seconds. Okay, we'll do it. Tana b'av maruch alachai v'chamim maskim b'lahaskim maskim. It was taught in the Brighter that when it comes to clouds and wind, you don't have to mention it. But if you did, you did. My tama, why mishum d'loim ba'adstrei? Because clouds and winds never stop. Another principle. D'loim ba'adstrei, but they never stop. V'hatani, but it's taught in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef says, v'atzarit ha'shamayim. God will close up the heavens. And how does that verse go? We say, v'atzarit ha'shamayim v'lo yeh matar. God will close up the heavens and there won't be rain. So what does it mean that God will close up the heavens? Min aruchot, presumably. No, surely it means God's not going to stop the rain. Not that God's going to stop the wind and the clouds. Kishuhu omer, as it goes on to say, lo ye matar. Says, oh no, hare matar amo. That means it already, God could have just said, if you don't listen to me, lo ye matar, there will not be rain. But it says, vatsarat hashamayim, v'lo ye matar. I will close up the heavens and there won't be rain. Sounds like two different things God is threatening. So now we've got a Mishnah that says God does stop wind and cloud. So now the Gemara says, Kasha ruchot aruchot kasha avim ha'afim. We've got a contradiction between whether clouds and wind is stopped or not, because we've got a brighter that began and said God stops the wind, and God never stops the wind and clouds, so you don't have to mention it. And we've got Rav Yosef saying no, God does stop the wind and the cloud, because it says tzarid ha'shamayim lo yamata. How do I resolve the problem? Avim ha'afim lo kasha, clouds and clouds is no problem, because haba charfe haba afele. There are two kinds of clouds. The early clouds, God never stops. The late clouds that aren't that important, God will shut up and stop, because it's not that key to who we are. I'll turn to the meteorologist for my expertise on this. Ruchat aruchat akasha, and the fact that Rav Yossi says that God will stop the winds, lo kasha, is not a problem. Habaruch metsuya, habaruch she'enu metsuya, because the regular wind, God never stops. The ruch she'enu metsuya, the kind of extra wind, God will stop on occasion. Ruch she'enu metsuya chaz lebe dre. Well, hold on a minute. Surely you need that extra wind to do the... is that called winnowing? When you throw up the chaff and it blows off the outside? So you need that. That's not something God can play with. I can't make bread. I can't make food without it. No. Efshab anafta. Use a sieve, my friend. So there are other ways to do it. So only things that are strictly necessary. God never stops, but other things he can. Next time we'll begin with more clouds. And we'll turn to the snow and rain. And next week we'll have quite a bit of a gadita about what it means to be a sage, a scholar, and how on earth we connect that to meteorology and providence and the powers that we have to affect God. But in the meantime, we're nearly 10% of the way through the Masechta, which I'll say every week until we get to 10% through the Masechta. But in the meantime, I wish you all a wonderful day. Did we do B'chananim and Akasha? We didn't do. Oh, you did benching too. A few good things.